Tonight, we will recreate D.B. Cooper's last flight and examine two other cases. In one, an $8 million collection of sports memorabilia has disappeared. Among the treasures was Babe Ruth's uniform. In the other, two teenage boys lay motionless in the path of an onrushing train. Their parents believe they were murdered.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Join me. You may be able to help solve the mystery.
Really took off. So, like, what do you? I can imagine you're kind of like under pressure to come up with something crazy next, or like, or at least it must be an internal pressure. I know I'd feel the same way, where it's like, shit, this Mothman movie was huge. Now what am I gonna do? You know, it's like, so I don't want to know what you're gonna do specifically, but it's like, how do you sort of deal with that pressure and you know, what's in your mind right now as you're looking at possible next projects that you're gonna help.
But our biggest thing is always like what stories we're still able to tell, because there's a ton of stories like I'd love to tell, like the Kentucky Goblins, and you know, like even Flatwoods was in that realm for a while. It was one we constantly got asked about, you know, when are you going to make a Flatwoods movie? And I kept saying we're not going to, because there's hardly any witnesses left, but we are making a Flatwoods movie, and I'm actually filming the final couple interviews this Saturday, and
Wow.
we did manage to get some witness interviews. So
did you go to the Flatwoods Festival?
I did not. No,
okay, yeah.
I don't think that happens anymore. They've kind of turned the Flatwoods Monster Festival into like this gaming and science fiction convention. Strangely enough, it's called Bonus Round. But unfortunately, next year it's scheduled for the exact same weekend as the Mothman Festival, so I'll have to miss that. But it's mostly like trying to figure out what stories we're able to tell in our way, because I mean, obviously we could narrate our way through almost any story, or get, you know, Lauren or whoever, like experts to tell the story. But I'm more interested still in kind of getting original witnesses involved. So, you know, when it came to like choosing the movie we wanted to do after Mothman, it was Flatwoods pretty easily, because it's a story I love, and it's a story that, you know, we all kind of had an interest in telling. And once I found out I was able to get an original witness or two involved, it kind of became clear that would be the final film of the Appalachian Monster Trilogy, which is Mothman, Invasion, and Flatwoods. And then and then that'll segue into the Bray Road movie that we're making next April for release next October, and that'll lead into the Midwest Monsters of the Midwest trilogy. So we're kind of
You've got a roadmap.
We're like planned out through 2020 as far as like what we're planning on doing. So, and I never felt like any intense pressure as far as like what story to tell, but you obviously feel pressure to, you know, to continue growing in what you're doing, because like we're all, almost everyone on the crew and including myself, are either self-taught or we're so bathed in like neuroses that we're like just a jumble of anxiety when we're all together. So like we're all convinced all the time that everything we're doing is terrible. So we're always trying to get better and improve. And so for me, it's this pressure from project to project to make sure that we're not stagnating, or like, you know, we're doing the same thing over and over. I'm always trying to make sure that we're getting better with each movie. So hopefully that's the case. I felt like Invasion was a step up in terms of like storytelling. Even though I don't quite, you know, I respond to the Mothman story, I think, a little better than I do the Invasion story, but I hope each movie, when you sit down and you watch them all back to back, that you can be like, oh yeah, you can see the growth from project to project. And I have no intention of, getting lazy and not trying to learn, you know, new things as we're going along. And obviously the biggest thing at the end of the day for us is that the stories themselves are told in the best possible way, and that we're preserving the witnesses, you know, details and the characteristics that they described, and kind of like putting the audience in the place of those witnesses is a big part of what we're doing, and showing that these people aren't all crazy, and that what they experienced is what they said they experienced, and that's a big part of what we do.
Yeah. Well, like I said about sort of reading something in a book and then seeing it in a movie, it's like, it's easier to dismiss somebody sort of when you're reading their story, but when you're seeing them on the screen and they're telling it, it's like, I don't know, there's a personal element where I watch it, and in my mind I'm just thinking to myself, like, this lady did not make this story up. Like, like she didn't, like, I'm thinking about one, I think the Mothman witness in the Mothman movie, and it's like, there's no, you know, why would she make that up? Is that a bipedal canine cryptid?
Yeah, that's Bubby the monster.
Nice.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, so like seeing the witnesses firsthand in the movie is big, because you have to give them the benefit of the doubt, because like I said, why would they make this stuff up? You really get the impression when you see them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the kind of approach I have to this Flatwoods movie, because the Flatwoods story is so freaking weird. And it really turned those people into a laughing stock, like the witnesses into a laughing stock for a long time.
Right.
And I cannot fathom that they made that story up. You know, like, and you can get into like, okay, maybe they misidentified an owl or some sort of, you know, creature standing there or something. But like, as far as like making up the story, a lot of these witnesses have absolutely nothing to gain,
right,
you know, other than decades of scorn and ridicule from the community where these things take place. And I do get that there are people who thrive off of attention, and I would never, you know, I have all the skeptical.
You can kind of spot them though. You can kind of like, yeah,
sure,
not that hard if you've seen enough of this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I do. Things like the Flatwoods story, man. I love that Flatwoods story. Is something I've loved for a long time, and just getting to play a part in telling that story for myself is kind of like right up there with Mothman for me.
Because
that was like, Mothman was one of the big stories, and Flatwoods, I just never thought we would actually have the opportunity to do a Flatwoods movie, and now we're actually the witness we're interviewing. This weekend he's not in very good health, so I'm not sure, you know, how many more times he'll get to tell the story. And the movie is very much like a retrospective on not just the Flatwoods monster encounter, but also like the impact it had on the lives of the witnesses, and then also how there's this really bizarre history of unusual happenings around the town of Flatwoods that I don't think people are really aware of. It's something we found out during the filming of the movie, actually, that there's this bizarre history around Sutton and Flatwoods, West Virginia, of like UFO sightings and strange creatures in the woods. And even one of the weirder things about the Flatwoods monster is that the term the Flatwoods monster came back in like the 70s, only it was being given to this upright walking, hair covered Bigfoot type creature.
Oh, weird.
So that's another really bizarre aspect to that story, is that later on it became this name that they gave to a Bigfoot.
Oh, weird. See, yeah, I never heard of that. See, that's what I like. You're digging into this stuff on a deeper level than just, you know, here's a UFO thing, here's some stock footage. Like, have they, it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of a business related question in a sense, but like, have, because when I see the Chestnut Ridge movie, part of me is just like, why isn't this on TV? Like, has there been any movement, or is this something you're not interested in, or is it just hasn't happened yet? Because, like, if you could do, like, 13 of these in the season of TV, I would be, like, riveted beyond belief. I would love it. But
yeah,
that's what I'm wondering. Or is that something you're not interested in making the transition to just yet?
I'm totally interested in it, and you know, if we had the offer, it would be
right. It'd
be something we'd look at. We did talk to production companies back when Minerva Monster was being made, actually, because Minerva Monster, for whatever reason, it got picked up on like a national scale by the news, and it was on Animal Planet, was covering all kinds of places were covering it.
Nice.
And we started getting attention from a couple different production companies in LA and New York. And but what they wanted to do with Small Town Monsters was not at all what we were doing. You know, they were trying to create this bizarre, like we were going to be in a van driving around and
getting
Small Town Monsters like we were Scooby-Doo and the gang.
Oh God.
And Megan Fox was going to be involved at one time. So
what?
Like, it was very strange. And
as a producer or a star of the show?
No, as like a one episode, like the pilot episode would have involved her and us in a van. Yeah, no, that
it's
real.
Probably like some hotshot producer in LA who like knows Megan Fox and he likes the paranormal kind of, and he's like, I can get her on the show, don't worry.
Yeah.
Wow,
no.
Weird.
She's not doing anything better.
Yeah.
So we've gone down that road and we've had talks, but as far as like someone buying broadcast rights, we had to get a distributor on board to really get, you know, networks to take a look. So hopefully that will happen down the road. I mean, the best thing people can do if they're interested in something like that is just email or social media, tweet at people, be like, watch the movie, whatever. I mean, we're very grassroots and independent. The movies are all completely crowdfunded through Kickstarter. We're launching our next Kickstarter on January 26th, and that'll pay for everything we make during 2018. So that's how we kind of rely on our fan base to even continue doing this from year to year. So I definitely would love to see them on TV, though. I think there's an audience for these movies, and I think they're I think they're of a quality, and they're getting to a quality of, you know, where you could see them playing on TV, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, this Mothman movie should give you some cachet. You should call up just call up Sci-Fi. And and say, hey, what's going on? Here's my Chestnut Ridge movie. You gonna buy it or what?
Yeah.
No, it's they could easily make the transition to TV, and they're tremendous stuff. I really like it a lot. And as I said, you can tell you know and love this stuff and give it a fair treatment. Where before, you know, we were talking, you do mention that, like, people think it might have been a pelican, but, like, you don't trot out, like, Dr. Sniffin' Pants, who's, like, a pelican expert, you know, and he's like, well, you see, and he explains the whole thing. Like, no one wants to see that, so that's...
Well, that's the most consistent complaint we've gotten from skeptics, is that we don't have, like, Jill Nichol, like, talking about why this isn't, you know, why this is an owl, and there's this one idiot who has been hitting me on social media for like the last year over fact that I didn't mention that there was an owl sanctuary next to the TNT area. And frankly, I mean, what difference does it make if there's an owl sanctuary? There's owls all over the TNT area regardless. Like, it could have been a normal, it could have been an owl that wasn't at the sanctuary. Like, you know, like, we, at the end of the day, when you watch the movie, we're not telling you it was an owl or wasn't an owl or was a, you know, a flying humanoid monster. We're simply letting the stories of the people that live in Point Pleasant and the witnesses come across, and that's it. You know, there's no real input from us. This is the purest form of documentary storytelling.
Yeah.
Totally informed by my brief tenure as a as a freelance, you know, newspaper reporter. I mean, it's the same way we told stories for the paper.
Well, if the Golden Yeti wasn't proof enough, having a crazy, psychotic, lunatic, quote-unquote, fan is a sure sign you've made it in the paranormal. So, yeah. Jesus. Yeah. They're the dirt worst, folks. Don't be those people. Well, somebody...
By the way, as long as we're talking about Mothman, I believe there is a new Mothman book coming from Lauren in the next like year or so. I don't know if that has been mentioned anywhere else, and he might kill me just for saying it on the show. But I know for a fact that it's happening.
Well, if we're doing plugs, then people should check out Jean St. Jean's cryptid figures and artwork. She's a huge fan, and I made the joke on the Facebook as I said you were going to be on the show, and she was like, "Finally!"
Gene is like, Gene and I met at a Bigfoot conference, and the first thing he said to me, I walked up to Gene, and Gene said to me, So what do you think of this mess? And as soon as she said that,
I
was like, oh, yeah, I can connect with this guy. So, like, Gene and I think connect on that level. And Gene is very, very super talented. He's also very supportive of Small Town Monsters and has been. In fact, like, he was the first person to tell me they liked Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, outside of, like, my family and the crew. He was the first person to watch Invasion and give me a review, and he gave me like a 10-paragraph glowing review of the movie.
Nice.
And yeah, and I don't know if you've seen his Mothman statue that he did for the for Creature Replica that was also a part of our Kickstarter, but it is amazing. He did this like Mothman resin statue, and it's one of the best likenesses of the Mothman I've ever seen.
I've seen some of his work, and it's outstanding. So I'm not surprised. Yeah, he's very talented.
Yeah.
There we go. We got our plugs in now. And someone in the chat room made a point, and it's true. It's like they said sci-fi would butcher what was done, and I kind of agree in a sense. Where not necessarily in that way, because they would have you'd have to cut it up and put some commercials in and stuff. But it's like I think you're a lot like me, where it's like you've created this thing from the ground up, and it's like this is your baby, and it's very hard to trust people with. You know, I don't know. I always kind of say I don't work well with others. I don't play well with others. It's like, you know, people want to team up on stuff. I'm like, you know, yeah. I got my baby, and that's kind of what my thing is, you know.
That's actually – that is me. You just described me. I really am fiercely independent, and it's not like, oh, man, I'm so cool, like indie punk rock. It's like I'm terrible about, like – anyone telling me what to do. It's like my biggest fault, honestly. It's my biggest fault, and I think one of the strengths of why we're able to do what we're doing is because of that fact, but it's also like one of those things where I don't know how it would go if we did get bought up, you know, by a major network or something. And I do think that's true. I think if they had Invasion on Chestnut Ridge especially, you'd see – you know, 16 minutes of the movie would get chopped out right out of the gate because the movie is an hour long. It's 61 minutes long. They'd chop 16 minutes out of the movie. My buddy Aaron Cadieu, who made the Bridgewater Triangle movie. Destination America bought that movie. That's a 90-minute movie. And they chopped that thing down to 44 minutes and changed the narrator and all kinds of stuff happened.
Oh, really? I didn't know they changed the narrator. That's bullshit.
That is what I've heard. I haven't actually seen the televised version, but someone had told me they completely changed the narrator. I don't know why I'm having trouble saying that word.
Well, it's good. Don't do a Bridgewater Triangle movie because they've done too many of those already now, and it's. I'm burned out on Bridgewater.
I'm a fan of Aaron's movie actually.
Exactly.
The Bridgewater Triangle movie
a
lot. So Aaron was like one of the first filmmakers I ever spoke to. Like other, you know, like I didn't start out as a filmmaker. I got into this totally by happenstance, and he was one of the first like guys who had made an established movie who actually took the time to take a phone call from me and try to help me through some editing difficulties during the making of Minerva Monster. So I owe that dude a great debt.
Yeah. That's a great movie. That's a fantastic movie. I'll definitely give him that because I've seen. I should rephrase what I said earlier because in a sense it's like now that I think about it, that's the only Bridgewater Triangle documentary I've seen, and it's like the best. There's no other. How could you top that? Because there's so many people in it.
Right.
You know, I think that's kind of what I was thinking. It's like you can't really do a different angle on it because he covered every like every angle you can think of in the movie. And it's like, I don't know what you could explore differently with that topic, you know?
Yeah. And I think Invasion is as close to that as I'll ever get, like that kind of story as I'll get.
Well, it was eerily similar to the Bridgewater Triangle. I came out of the theater. I finished watching the movie and was like, I was like, Jesus, I didn't realize – that was, I think I mentioned it earlier, that it was like a window zone, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. But apparently it is.
Yeah, that's what Lauren did a whole post about the window area and then like the name game with Fayette, the Fayette name and all that kind of stuff today. on his copycat. What, I forget the name of the
Twilight
website,
Language.
But,
that's an awesome endeavor that he has.
Yeah, yeah. And it was pretty cool to read him doing, you know, going that in depth on our little movie, because you could see that it kind of had gotten the wheels in Lauren's head turning, which in itself is an accomplishment, because, you know, like, you feel like you've made one of the world's foremost cryptid writers actually, you know, pause and think a little bit about your little project.
Yeah,
that's,
you got the attention
cool
of
thing.
The master. I do that a lot with him. I'll send him emails or something. I'm like, have you been looking at zoos lately? Something's going on with zoos, Lauren. And then he'll send me back like 3 news stories where he's like, here's what I've dug up. I'm just like, holy shit. Something weird's going on. Yeah. So it's always cool when you get his attention. Somebody in the chat room said, is he going to have Linda Godfrey on the Bray Road movie? I assume she's kind of like the Stan Gordon of the Bray series.
She's going to be involved. And I'm actually in the process of finishing up Beast of Bray Road book right now, which I don't know why it took me so long to get to this book, because it has quickly become probably one of my top 10 favorite cryptozoology paranormal books, I think, that I've ever read. I absolutely love her take on it, and her sense of humor is hilarious, and she's got this slightly subversive kind of almost skeptical viewpoint on it that comes through that I really loved. She's got to be involved in the movie. I said someone had posted the same thing on Facebook and said, you'd better have Linda Godfrey involved. And she had actually commented and said, yes, I'm going to be a part of it. And I said, we wouldn't have made it without her. And that is,
you really can't, like, it's
100% true. There's some of these people are so tied to the story that they are as important in a way as the original witnesses. And
she's
one of those characters, you know, and it's like Stan with the Chestnut Ridge. I mean, you have to have them involved or it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she was fantastic to meet at the International Cryptozoology Conference in Portland. She was just a treat, you know. She was just somebody who I was just blown away by. She was awesome. She was really cool.
Yeah, and she signed my Beast of Bray Road paperback and drew this little Beast of Bray Road werewolf cartoon character inside, which was pretty awesome.
Nice, yeah, because she was a cartoonist first. The interesting, I think I said this to somebody, I don't know if I said it on the show or not, but with her it's interesting, like, that story had kind of been percolating around for a while, and like you say, how these people are linked to these stories. If she hadn't picked up on that, if she hadn't run with that story, you know, it could still be sitting there. You know, these things, you know, it could have lingered for another 10 years or something before somebody picked it up, or never or something.
That's the danger in these stories not being kind of documented by someone like her, is that, you know, in the case of most of these communities where these things happen, unless someone like her happens to get on board at some point, the stories will just disappear.
Yeah.
You know, because witnesses die and stories fade away, and especially when it's something like a story about a werewolf, you know, roaming the countryside, that is not exactly embraced by a rural community. You know, the local historical society doesn't go out and try to capture, you know, any documentation on that to help preserve that story. That'll completely disappear. It's interesting, because that's actually what had happened in the case of the Minerva Monster story. When we showed up in Minerva to make the Minerva Monster movie, we were shocked. Like, the most shocking thing to me was that no one we talked to remembered that taking place. It was like 1 in 100 people you talked to remembered the Minerva Monster story. And that stretched out to like older people, younger people especially, but even some of the older people had completely forgot it had ever happened. And then, you know, in the case of the Minerva Monster, that story was all over the local news. It was on national news. It was on international news. There were news crews that came to Minerva from Germany and Japan, but that story somehow had been entirely forgotten by the bulk of the people in Minerva until, until the Minerva Monster movie came out. And then all of a sudden you can't, I can't walk into a business in Minerva without like five people coming up trying to tell me about their Minerva Monster story now. But,
well,
you know, I mean,
enlighten me, because I haven't seen the movie yet, and this is a story that is obscure to me. So what is, I assume this is some kind of like Bigfoot-like creature, but then again, it's, when it comes to Seth Breedlove, it's never what you think. It's always something, you know, it's all, you're going to get more layers to the story. So what is this Minerva Monster thing?
It's the story is probably my favorite Bigfoot story. It involves this family that lived outside of the town of Minerva, Ohio, right off the Lincoln Highway, who had been kind of harassed by this creature that would appear on the hill behind their house frequently. It seemed to have an attraction. And by attraction, I don't mean like it wanted to get it on with her, but it seemed to have some sort of attraction to the mother of the family.
You know my audience would, well.
Yeah, I just thought I needed to clarify in case people started wondering. So the creature seemed to really pay a lot of attention to the mom, and anytime the mom was outside, it would show up. The story kind of reached its culmination when something or someone had torn one of the Caton's dogs, it was a massive German Shepherd, from its leash and snapped its neck.
Jesus.
And they called the police the next night because the creature came up on their house again during a family get-together. And it actually walked right up to the window of the house, and the mother actually held a gun to the window, like she was going to shoot it through the window, and the thing didn't do anything. It stared at her, and then after a couple of minutes it turned around and walked back up the hill. But they called the police, and the local police came out to investigate, and they couldn't find anything, but they did smell an odd smell that smelled like rotten eggs or ammonia. And the story got picked up by the AP Wire and by the Akron Beacon Journal, and it became this like global sensation. Close to Minerva, it was like the story at the time. So what ended up happening was like all these drunken hunters descended on Minerva. People were going up, parking along the Lincoln Highway and going up into the woods behind the Caton's house and like trying to hunt a Bigfoot. And it got so bad. My favorite aspect of the story is that there were so many hunters parking along the Lincoln Highway that they actually had to shut the road down. They actually had to shut the highway down
because
cars couldn't get through. The story kind of it broke over the course of that year, and there were multiple encounters with the creature. And if you talk to the Catons today, they say they're still seeing it, you know, in the woods behind their house. And of course, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't simply revolve around this Bigfoot sighting. There's lots of other strange activity that was taking place in 1978 when this was going on. The Catons claimed that there were like disappearing caves behind their house, and that they saw Native American women on horseback that would disappear, and they heard odd chanting that seemed to come from the ground. And they saw one of the really strange aspects of the case is that there were UFOs being seen in the area at the time, naturally. And one of the really my favorite part of the story actually is that the police deputy who investigated the case, James Shannon, he said he only ever investigated two strange, they're called unusual. There's actually like a police terminology for this, and I can't remember. I think it's just – oh, it's unusual incident report.
Yeah.
There's actually a separate report like they fill out, and he only ever investigated two of these in like 50 years on the police force. And one of them was the Minerva Monster sighting, and the second one was 2 weeks later when a UFO landed in a field. And when he got to the location, it was directly across the street from the Caton's house.
Oh, my God.
So these people had called in saying that a flying saucer had landed in the field behind their house. So there's a lot of weird stuff going on at that time. Of course, I personally chalk up some of this to like hysteria. I do think the Catons, you know, were seeing something, but some of it, because it got pretty insane around Minerva during that time. The Catons would like, the people would drive up their driveway late at night and scream Bigfoot at them and throw eggs at the house. And
what?
Like, yeah, oh, Yeah, I mean, like, the Howie Caton, the youngest son at the time, told me that the entire incident, the entire Bigfoot thing, made his final year of high school an absolute hell for him.
I can imagine, yeah.
So that story took place too, only about 20 minutes from where I grew up, because I grew up in this tiny town called Bolivar, Ohio, and that story was kind of always something I was aware of, at least vaguely, especially as a kid. There were, you know, kids would say, "Don't go out in the woods, or the Minerva monster will get you," and stuff like that. So,
you know, I wonder, in a sense, I was going to ask you about. You know, I lamented this on the show with Steve Berg a couple of weeks ago, and I think with Ron Collier, there's not really a lot of, like, modern events, you know. They're very hard to, like, find. And part of me wonders, I was thinking this earlier, and then what you said about the harassment that this kid had to face, it only kind of solidified the idea, in a sense, where it makes you wonder now if, it's funny, they say, oh, you just sell your cell phones, no one takes any pictures of UFOs and all that stuff. But it's like, I wonder if the technology actually is hurting the paranormal in a way where it's like, if you had Bigfoot scratching on your door and you were legit and not a lunatic who wants attention, you might not tell anybody, because you might be all, like, you're going to become internet famous, and no one wants to be that unless you're, like, a crazy person.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know, and I don't have an answer for that, because that is something I wonder.
No, it's just me going off.
Yeah,
the
no.
mouth, but
but like, it's
speculate with me.
Yeah. See, it's like one of those things I don't quite understand, because we do have cases like this still happening, like the Phantom Clown thing that happened last year. Like, that really reminds me of like a Bigfoot flap or something. You know.
Oh,
like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's got all those same characteristics, but at the same time, you're right. Like, we don't have the flaps that kind of broke out, or maybe the other thing is maybe we do, but they're just not reported.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
In the papers in the same way that they were back then. But it does seem like all the great, like the best stories, my favorite, you know, the ones we really want to turn into films are all from like the mid-60s to like the late 70s. That seems to be like the golden age of like really great sighting stories. Occasionally you get like the Bray Road story takes place. The bulk of that is in the 90s. But I do wonder like why.
Yeah, Bray Road's the only like really quote unquote modern
right.
phenomenon you've seen. I've seen in recent years.
Yeah, at least that would be on that same level. Like there was the thing last year. What was it? Bessie? Is that the name of the?
Oh, Wessie the snake.
Wessie, yeah. That kind of had the same kind of vibe to me. But
yeah, but that's like a snake.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like, just not as cool. Yeah.
Right. It's not a mystery animal.
Yeah.
You don't see exactly like a flap of like all of a sudden people think. Because Lauren introduced me to a really interesting idea when he was on the show earlier this year that, like, maybe these creatures, and I never thought of it, like, but it makes sense, maybe these creatures just travel, they're on a constant travel migration, you know, lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they may cross through Chestnut Ridge at a certain time of year, and, you know, if we could figure that out, maybe we'd be able to get to the bottom of it, but they don't seem to be like in one particular place for too long.
Right. No, I totally agree. And that especially reminds me of like in Whitehall, you know, we made the Beast of Whitehall movie. The thing that I consistently noticed with that story was like sighting reports there seemed to go in not in flaps, but in bunches. Like all of a sudden you'd get a bunch of sightings and then they'd die off for a year and then they'd come back. And it always seems to be around the same time of year and dependent on where they're taking place. And those Hebert Road sightings that we got into in our film were over the course of only 1 week. It was like 1 week of all these sightings taking place of this Bigfoot like creature. And of course, the weird thing about that story is it was synonymous with this massive UFO wave taking place.
Right.
But, you know, what cracks me up is like I've talked to UFO or Bigfoot researchers in that area in upstate New York who totally believe that Bigfoot is some sort of like alien that's being dropped off by a UFO or whatever. But that seems to make very little sense, because the same person that was telling me this was also telling me how they could track the migration patterns. And I was like, well, why do they need to migrate if a UFO is like dropping
right.
them off?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going off on tangents now on my own.
No,
but like,
this has been all of America, baby.
But
well,
yeah,
because it's true in a sense where, yeah, I mean, the whole UFO connection is always what also trips me up with Bigfoot, because I read Stan Gordon's book too, and it blew my mind, because at that point I was like, there has to be some connection here, even if it's quote unquote prosaic, where it turns out the aliens are as fascinated by Bigfoot as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, because they're infinitely intelligent, they happen to know Bigfoot's crossing through Chestnut Ridge at this time of year, and then they're just like hovering over them like, all right, let's try, see if we can figure out what this Bigfoot thing is. You know, I mean, who knows? But there seems to be some connection between the two phenomena that, in a sense, is undeniable. And it led me, in a way, to the idea that I think a lot of people who were in the cryptozoology field are confronted with this question. Well, what do you think it is? What do you think it is? It's like, it could be both of these things. It could be like a flesh and blood animal and, you know, a myriad of different sort of like paranormal phenomena in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see. I fall firmly in the flesh and blood, like undiscovered primate camp. Mm-hmm. And as it's funny, cause like things like Invasion on Chestnut Ridge really take me outside of my comfort zone. Cause
right.
like I'm getting into areas that I don't have answers for. And then at the same time, I'm like, man, if you look at the number of Bigfoot reports that Stan has cataloged in his, you know, since 1959, by the way, that he got into all of this.
Oh, wow.
The number of sighting reports, Bigfoot, the actual quantity of those reports that involve a UFO is like nothing. I mean, it's a minuscule, it's like 2% or something crazy.
It's an outlier.
But those are the ones that stand out too, because it's like it does. And the funny thing to me is, I'm saying that, you know, like it's so uncommon. But at the same time, we made three Bigfoot movies back to back to back, and then we made Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, and obviously Invasion on Chestnut Ridge has a Bigfoot UFO connection. But of those first three, with Minerva, and Whitehall, and Boggy Creek, only Boggy Creek didn't have some sort of UFO connection. There was no UFO connection with
that
story.
Exactly. See, I thought you had more of an inclination toward the UFO connection then.
No, I'm very much like in the boring old flesh and blood Bigfoot camp. But I'm definitely, I love this side of the subject. I'm not scared of it. I said Invasion took me out of my comfort zone. What I mean by that is, it just puts me in a place where I'm like questioning everything,
right, right.
Because it isn't terribly common, but it does seem like a lot of the major flaps that I've investigated for whatever reason do have that connection. And even if they don't have that connection directly, there's some like with the Momo flap, the Missouri Monster flap, there were UFO sightings going on all over that area around the same time as the Missouri Monster sightings. So like, you know, like even when there's not a direct connection between the two, there still seems to be this bizarre sort of like tenuous connection between the two.
Yeah. Now, I guess somebody asked you about this at the Q&A after the movie in Portland, but I'm a diehard cigarette smoker, so I had to, diehard, that's the best way to put it. So I had to leave after the movie to quickly feed my horrible addiction, and I missed the question, but I'm interested in your take on this. Because somebody asked you what you think of this Chicago Mothman flap. I mean, here we go. That is allegedly happening right now. I mean, I assume that the reports are accurate. I have no idea. I haven't really dug into it. Ironically, I'm sounding hypocritical, but it's like we say there are these modern events, but at the same time, you kind of have to let some time pass before you can really know what what separate the wheat from the chaff, in a sense. So,
right.
I think if in a year or two we may have a better perspective on what the hell's going on with these Mothman thing going in Chicago. So I guess what's your thought on that? And also, having done the Mothman movie, there's a funny thing that I noticed. Not to diminish what's going on in Chicago, but I think Mothman has become like the next Chupacabra, where it's like any weird flying thing becomes Mothman.
Yeah.
So we don't. Yeah. It's like we're calling it the Chicago Mothman, but it's like it probably has nothing to do with whatever happened in West Virginia.
Well, you know? also to add to that, like I do not think there is any other whatever you want to call it, folktale or urban legend or cryptid, however you want to catalog the Mothman. I don't think there's any other creature that has the same level of pop culture prominence and the rabid cult-like fan base that follows Mothman. And that's something I found out just from making our Mothman movie. There is
right.
There is a rabid fan base out there that will follow anything Mothman does. And just in the last week, there was like this BuzzFeed article about how Mothman's a queer icon, and there's it's just like every week I see something new, you know, in the media of relating to Mothman. But yeah, the Chicago sightings, I don't know what to make of them. Lon Strickler has done a great job of cataloging them.
Yeah, he's collected like all these amazing stories.
Yeah, and making the map and all that kind of stuff, and he's done a really good job of tracking all of that. I can tell you that. Brandon, who produced the first three movies we made and does all the music for our movies, he actually went to Chicago like 2 months ago, kind of at the height of all those sightings, and went directly to the location of two of the sightings. And his personal opinion was that his opinion, and this is his opinion, obviously not mine, I wasn't there. His opinion was more than likely the stories were made up because of the fact that where these happened, the time of day when they happened, et cetera, et cetera. There was no way someone didn't get a photo of what was going on because these sightings took place in one of the busiest sections of Chicago during the middle of the day, skyscrapers all over the place, people everywhere. And he did not personally believe that those sightings took place. Or if they did, his other theory was that it might have been kites or like, those winged suits, you know, that people can wear. So his thing, that's something I've heard. I think even Lauren Coleman said something about the kites when I was asked at the, because someone asked us about that. I don't know if you got to see, but Lauren actually moderated the Small Town Monsters panel that I did at CryptidCon in Kentucky. And it was really cool because the panel
I wasn't in Kentucky.
Yeah, you got to check it out though online.
I didn't know it was
the
online.
Entire
yeah.
thing. Yeah, I posted the whole thing on Small Town Monsters Facebook page.
Did you see me in Kentucky? Because I was not there. I don't know who you talked to.
Could you look in your mirror, your magic mirror, and check me out? But no, Lauren moderated the panel, and it was Stan Gordon, myself, and Lyle Blackburn, and then with Lauren moderating, he actually talked a little bit about the Chicago sightings and chalked it up to kites, which I thought was interesting. So
yeah, that is interesting.
At the same time, there's something going on there. You know, I can't tell if it's a modern mythology being born, if we're watching the birth of a folktale, or if it's genuine, if this is really a flap taking place, multiple people are seeing it, or if it's just people wanting to be involved. I did find it intriguing that some of the witnesses, at least a couple of the witnesses, were police officers or said to be police officers.
Yeah, I mean, Lon's done a great job collecting the cases, but at the same time, it's like he's almost reached a critical mass. It's like, what point do you... What can you do with this story? You know what I mean? It's like, I don't quite
right.
know what to make of it because unless some bridge collapses, like
right.
we don't, is this going somewhere? I guess that's the question. You know what I mean? It's like you listen to these
yeah.
stories and it's like, all right, where is this? There's an ominousness to it where you think, all right, this could be going to something bad. But then at the same time, you're like, I'm not sure if this is, it's like watching a bad TV show. It's like, am I is there a payoff to this, or
right.
are they just going to stop, you know?
Right. Yep. And again, like, I think we have to take anything with a grain of salt, you know, when it comes to these sighting reports, due to the fact that the Mothman is everywhere in pop culture right now, including our movie, obviously. When the Mothman flap in Chicago kicked off, we were accused in multiple locations. Yeah, there was actually a Mysterious Universe article written by Paul Seaburn that mentioned that, but he was like joking. There was like a, you know,
yeah.
a tongue-in-cheek manner that he approached that, but there were posts online, including on our Facebook page wall, where people were like, hey, you know, you guys should stop hoaxing the sightings in Chicago to promote your movie. And I'm like, man, I'm nowhere near that intelligent when it comes to promotion, and then second of all, I don't have the money to like station someone in Chicago and, you know, pull all this off, and it would
yeah.
be pretty lousy promotion for the movie anyway, considering we haven't been mentioned in connection with it once in major media.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, congratulations, dude. You've acquired, you know, crazed critics.
Yeah.
They come out of the woodwork, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially when you're involved in this particular subject matter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's unfortunate in a sense, but it's like we exist on the fringe here. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so we interact with the denizens of the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes
it's
they're awesome
all
great
bad.
People. No, most
yeah,
of the
that's,
time
that's
they're
the
most
thing,
of the
like,
time they're awesome great people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the highlight of doing this has been the way the audience, the community, the Small Town Monsters people, you know, our supporters will rally around each Kickstarter, and every year the number
oh,
of people
yeah,
the back goes up. I mean, it's crazy to watch, because I think people are understanding with each new project. They're like, okay, man, I could actually be a part of helping to put this out, you know, and they get their name in the credits and all that kind of stuff. And because without that, there is no Small Town Monsters, especially early on. There was no way to do this, you know, out of pocket. There wouldn't have been a way to make Boggy Creek Monster without the support of, you know, the people that watch our movies. So.
Well, people love your stuff, man. And I'm one of them, because I'm blown away by what you're doing. So I hope you do. I was wondering, as we were doing this interview, you're like in your late 30s. We're going to have to consult with Laura on this. Is it possible? Let's say you stick with this for like 3 or 4 more decades, and you're like an old man, an old crotchety man, and like in like 2040, can you get a second Golden Yeti, or are you out of contention now? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could you be the first
two-time
winner?
I kind of feel like I could potentially just, I don't know, claim that I'm a lifetime. Maybe I can get some sort of lifetime award. So like every year, I could be like, they can give it to someone else, but they have to also put an addendum that Seth is also the Golden Yeti.
Wow,
so,
you're like on the thing, like the Stanley Cup you get. They
yeah.
like carve your name on there.
Yeah, I feel like that should definitely happen. Here's the funny thing, too, about the Golden Yeti, aside from the fact that I got it, is that I've never in my life won like some sort of trophy. That was like the first trophy I've been given, and of course Bigfoot was on it, which is perfectly fitting, and it looked amazing. So
yeah, I remember you
totally.
Asking me half facetiously, where you're like, do I have to defend this now? Like,
yeah.
like what? Well, even if you win two, I'm going to give a shout out to another guy from the conference in Portland. I think Thomas Morgan, the kid from the youth panel, he'll trump
yeah.
us all. He's going to end up with like 3 or 4 Golden Yetis somehow. By the time
Thomas
it's all said
was,
and done, he was
Thomas,
amazing.
The highlight for me of that panel was when he introduced himself at the beginning and said, hi, I'm nervous. And yeah, and you know, I saw Thomas the next weekend in Kentucky. So
yeah,
I saw that.
I was like, holy
yeah.
shit, dude. You're like traveling. You're like doing the circuit, Thomas. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
yeah,
I got to hang out with him the next weekend, like halfway across the country. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. He is super sharp, and if he sticks with this cryptozoology stuff, I think he's going to be like a force to be reckoned with. Because he's like 13 years old, folks, and I'm like sitting there having like in-depth conversation with him about the Squonk and the Puckwudgie and and whatever like the Australian equivalent of the Pukwudgie is. You know, he was just busting out all these names and stuff, and he's like, "What are you really referencing?" And I'm just like, "Oh God, there's a reason why they didn't invite me on the youth panel. I'm old."
See, that's something too that not to be offensive, but that nerdy level of like knowledge relating to these stories. That's where Mark Matsky really came into play with Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, because like. Mark's the one that narrated the movie and also wrote the narration, co-wrote the narration, and Mark is like a Chestnut Ridge Stan Gordon acolyte going way back.
Nice,
and
nice.
He brought that like encyclopedic knowledge of all those cases and everything to that story, which is why I think that he alleviated a lot of stress from me, I think, with that particular project, because he knows his Chestnut Ridge lore better than anyone, and he had such a like unique approach. That thing about human curiosity, that really is what the movie's about. When it's all over, that's the main thing that I take away from that movie, is like all these people are so drawn to investigate these mysteries that they will probably never, more than likely, they'll never have the answers to. In fact, they'll probably leave this earth with more questions than they'll have answers, you know, because the ridge seems to just keep adding more and more layers of mystery.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, there was a part of me watching the movie and then talking tonight, especially when I heard that thing about the Russians. It's like, there's a part of me that worries in a sense like that in a couple decades, again, when we're like old men and the people are long gone from the movie, that they're going to be like, yeah, we just dumped a ton of radioactive waste in Chestnut Ridge, and that we were really worried about what was going to happen and all this weird
stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, part of me also wonders sometimes if it's like these things happen through like an happenstance. Bad things happen because the government did something shady in a sense. You know what
right,
I mean? It's like
right.
Very like
no,
weird.
That's yeah. That definitely is something I've wondered with that particular case as well, because of the fact that the government does seem to have some shady involvement in the Chestnut Ridge and investigating
right.
those cases or following up on those cases,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, it's like some dude's like, I told you we shouldn't have dumped all that in Chestnut Ridge, man. Like they're seeing mm-hmm. Bigfoot and UFO now, you know, so who knows. Now, I got two last questions for you, man, because I know you got family at home and stuff, and you got to deal with that. First one, what was like, you just got back from Montana. You've been on a whirlwind, I made a joke about it in the preview, trip across the country here, around the United States, being lavished with awards and love. You know, first you were in Portland, then you went to the Mothman, Kentucky, then you went mm-hmm. to Point Pleasant, and then you were up in Montana. Mm-hmm. I was talking about it with Steve Berg last week, where it was like a couple weeks ago, where I was like, at times I'm like, oh, I wish I could be traveling all over the country doing this stuff. But then at the same mm-hmm. time, it's like, that's what drives rock stars like over the edge, that you're just seeing like hotels every weekend and
yeah.
that kind of thing. So, I mean, I guess you've experienced it over the last month. Like, what's it like being a paranormal rock star and hitting and doing the circuit? Doing the conference circuit.
I mean, like we don't do the thing is we've actually cut way back on like the amount of events we do now, but for some reason all these events fell within like this 5-week span of time, and then they'll continue somewhat into October because of the fact that we have a new movie coming out and we do screenings.
Right.
But like it got to the point last I guess it was just yesterday. I finally was like, man, I just feel sick. Like I flew all day on Monday,
right.
On the way back from Montana, and you get in and I feel like I barely saw my son this month, and he's only like 5 months old. And it definitely was a little more travel than I would like. And that's saying something, 'cause like I've been told I have the gypsy soul. Like I like to travel. I grew up in, you know, like sleeping in hotel rooms because my parents owned a bookstore and we did book shows for half the year and we're constantly on the road. So like I feel as at home in a hotel bed as I do in my own. But I definitely like being away from family as much as I was this month was crazy. But at the same time, like I had an absolute blast at every single event I did, which is crazy. But
right.
We really in Portland, I had a ball. I got to meet you and hang out with Lauren and meet Linda Godfrey. And, you know, like I got the Golden Yeti Award and we had a really great event there. And then we got to CryptidCon in Kentucky was amazing.
It sounded awesome. I wish I'd gone down there.
You know what was like surprising about it, and something that I think people need to be aware of, like when it comes around again next year, is you're basically spent like the ticket's like $20 or $25
or
something. So it might seem like, okay, well, am I spending this to get into a con? But I mean, CryptidCon, while it's definitely like a con, at the same time, it's very much like a conference because there's like all these guys speaking throughout the day. And,
right.
You know, I got to do that panel with the guys. And to me, it seems like a very cool opportunity to spend time with some really cool people.
No,
it sounded
cool. It looked really cool.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, so I'm highly recommending that. The Point Pleasant was insane, man. It was 3 days. Three of the craziest days of my life. Definitely, it was packed. I don't know what the exact number is, but it was. I don't think it was as. It definitely wasn't as congested as last year.
It sounds like it's becoming like the Roswell of like crypto zoology, for lack of a better field.
I think it is, and the crazy thing for us was like we did the what we were calling the official premiere of the Mothman of Point Pleasant at the State Theater on Friday night.
But I saw it before.
Yeah, I know. See, that's the thing. Like it was technically the it wasn't, but technically
it was the Point Pleasant premiere.
It was so anyway, we packed. There were like 300 plus people that came into that theater to watch. It was standing room only. People were standing along the back of the room, and the Q&A was great, and the response to the movie was fantastic, and it just started the entire weekend off on like exactly the right foot. And we had a ball at that. And then the Big Sky Bigfoot Conference, which is one of only like two Bigfoot conferences I'm doing this year in Montana. I did because the lady that puts it on, Sarah Letterly, she's super cool. And she's someone who I communicated with through email back when I used to do my Sasquatch podcast. And so I wanted to do it just because I wanted to meet her. But I got to hang out with Bob Gimlin and, Jeff Meldrum and some of these people. That was pretty cool. So it was a really cool event. And I'd never been to Montana before. So if nothing else,
Montana's
that alone, that alone made it worthwhile. It was gorgeous there. So it was crazy. And then we're not done. We've got New York. We're going to the Chautauqua Bigfoot Expo in a couple weeks. And then the week after that, October 21st, Invasion premieres, has its official premiere at Creature Weekend in Salt Fork State Park. So,
well, it's crazy. I mean, I my job is to like monitor the paranormal news, and it's like there is at least like two Bigfoot conferences going on like every weekend. It seems like all over the country. It's really remarkable. It's like wow.
Yeah.
This is so much bigger than UFOs nowadays, man. It's really
and
amazing.
90% of them I avoid, but there's a few who I, you know, like I'll make a special effort to be involved because it's just some of them can be really cool. It's just a lot of the time it's the same people talking over and over again.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, you know, I'm the paranormal curmudgeon, so I joked with Robert Schneck. It's like next time, my only like suggestion to Lauren next year would be like name tags for like the people, for some people, you know. It's like, because you and I, if I hadn't been talking to Thomas Morgan, ironically enough, and telling him to follow me on Twitter, we never would have connected because you had no idea who I was, and I was just discovering your stuff. So I was like, oh, wow, this guy's doing some amazing stuff. He's the Golden Yeti. So I gotta educate myself, you know?
Yeah.
All right, now we can go a little bit over the thing, but I'm sure I assume it won't take too long. But my final question, just to really break the fourth wall in a way, you mentioned your child earlier. Congratulations, man. You know, what's it like being a dad? What's it like, you know, having that change in your life?
Oh, it's crazy. You know, what's weird is like with the year I'm having and being away from home, it's actually made it that much more special, I think, because I come home and he's there and he's changed ever, especially this month.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm gone so much. It's like every time I come back, he's changed a little bit more.
Right, right.
But he's so amazing, and he's like, he's always smiling and laughing, and he's like, you know, it's the best. I guess it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I mean, obviously, everyone says that, and it's so sappy, but it really, like, it's definitely the highlight of my life so far is this kid. He's and he can poop like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's just
yeah, yeah.
Really,
well,
my
best friend just had a baby with his wife, and like a year ago, his daughter just turned one this year, and it's like I've kind of vicariously lived through that because, you know, I was at the house the day they brought her home, and I've been there, and it is like every time I come over, I'm just like, what is she doing now? Oh my God, she's changed so much. This is like amazing to watch. It gives me parent envy. Where I'm like, I gotta have a fucking kid. Jesus, this is awesome. I want one. Jeez.
He ate mashed potatoes last night for the first time. So like that was his first real.
Yeah,
like,
that's the yeah. Food. Everything's a,
so that was kind of funny.
Everything's all first and stuff. It's really like.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. And like I said, it makes me envious. So congratulations to you, sir. And and congratulations on the Golden Yeti for 2017 and the success of this film, the Mothman movie. And I hope that, in a way, I think it's cool that you kind of, like, you pivoted from the Mothman movie, but the Mothman movie exploded because now people will see this new movie and be like, holy shit, this guy's, like, prolific, man. He covers all kinds of stuff. So it's good that, like, your next movie wasn't, like, the Bigfoot of Tallahassee or whatever. So I think I wish you the best of luck, man. I really, really, really love the love both movies. And having just seen the Chestnut Ridge one, I was completely blown away by it. And I hope folks pick it up. October 20th at Small Town Monsters, they'll put you in touch with all the ways to get it.
Yep.
All right, man. Go change some diapers, all right?
I will do that.
All right, Seth. I can't thank you enough for doing the show. I really do appreciate it, and I'm sure our paths will cross in the not-too-distant future.
I hope so, man. And again, I really appreciate everything you've done and doing the show all these years and all that. It takes a ton of work, and a lot of people, myself included, were affected by it in a positive way.
No, thanks, man. Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And like I said earlier, I'm glad we had – you know, some ping of an influence on the direction of Small Town Monsters, because I'll take some pride in that for a long, long time. So thank you, and have a great night.
You too.
All right, folks, there you go. That was Seth Breedlove, Small Town Monsters. I'm telling you, folks, check out this movie. It's coming out in about 3 weeks at smalltownmonsters.com. As you say, you can get it on iTunes and a whole bunch of other platforms. It is outstanding. I can't put it over enough. I see a lot of these shows and documentaries, and I'm always like, oh, God. But this one was – it blew my mind by how much stuff it had in it and the educated look at it. You know, you knew from watching it that Seth had done his homework on these stories and these cases and stuff, and it didn't add a whole bunch of superfluous garbage that you often see in these shows. And on that note, I can't tell you who's going to be on next week because I don't have a guest scheduled yet, but I've got a list of about 3 or 4 people. I think we'll be returning to the guests who've been on in the past, but maybe just done 1 or 2 shows, and then we'll ease back in to the hardcore long-time guests, the family of BOA Audio, if you will, as we round out the show. And on that note, stay tuned to Banal of America on Facebook and BOA. I should do some in-house notes in a sense where you gotta just check the website on Tuesdays if we're going to have a show. And that'll tell you what time. Obviously, we're trying to do it at 9 p.m. We've done it pretty much at 9 p.m. this whole time. So Tuesdays at 9. But just go to the website on Tuesday and find out, because sometimes it takes us that long to post the show schedule. And that'll tell you who's going to be on the show. And on that note, we'll end the in-house notes. I'll stop rambling. And thank you all for listening. Talk to you next week. This is Tim Banal, signing off.